Welcome to Supervision Not Required, episode 5. Today we're going to be doing data manipulation with R. You should walk away with a functional knowledge on how to do basic data manipulation and derive insights on your data. So, data manipulation with R. Today we're actually going to be doing mostly hands-on. So the first thing that you need to do is go download the data set. You can find the link provided at the bottom of this video or in the pop-up that should have just appeared, and begin downloading that. The data set itself contains service requests from the City of Miami to their call center for each department. So when you open up the data set, you'll see that there's things like who the case owner is, geographic location, what they called for, what they called about, which department, so forth and so on. At the time of this recording, the data set was around 775,000 observations and 22 variables. That may or may not have changed by the time you watch this. However, the things that we're going to do in the video today should still be applicable. So let's start off with just what is data manipulation? So we've got the data set and we need to do some manipulation, but why? What is it? Data manipulation is primarily around cleaning, sorting, forming, mining, and really it's all about deriving insights. The data set that you've just downloaded is a fairly clean data set. So cleaning, it's not too much of a big issue. It's more getting the data into the proper format to derive the insights that you're interested in. And these insights could be something like comparing two things against each other, or how much of something there is, or how little is there. So typically you need to take a data set and summarize it, like what are the average number of calls on a typical day? Does that number change over time? These are the types of insights that we're trying to derive, and to derive those insights, you need to do some form of manipulation. And that manipulation is cleaning, sorting, forming, splitting, combining, so forth and so on. You'll notice that I'm using a variety of verbs to kind of describe these problems. These verbs and the way that you think about what you need to do with data maps directly to a few things that we're going to use. There are two really big packages that we're going to take advantage of. The first one is dplyr. It's spelled D-P-L-Y-R. And there's also the package MagRitter. What these two packages do is provide the basic framework that you need for data manipulation. dplyr provides a variety of verbs and helper functions for actually doing the manipulation and summarizations of data, while MagRitter provides a really nice forward pipe operator. So the forward pipe operator basically allows you to clean up your code in a very significant way, and we're definitely going to demo that. Now dplyr, there's a bunch of different packages out there that you can use. Dplyr, we chose to use this one because it's implemented in C++. It's functional from the ground up, so it works really well with the forward pipe operator, so it allows for really good, clean, concise looking code. And that's about all you really need. It's also one of the most commonly used packages out there, which means it's kind of tried and tested and true. So it's something that I feel comfortable deploying out into production. The dplyr package comes with a few different verbs. You've got select, mutate, filter, arrange, group, and summarize. So the real goal of the video is that by the end of this, you walk away with a functional knowledge on how to use these various verbs to derive insights from a data set. And the particular data set we're going to use is going to be the Miami 311 data set. So instead of giving you a whole spiel on how everything is and what it does and how it works, let's just dive straight into demos. I think demos is really just the easiest way to demonstrate code, and follow along. The code will be provided at the bottom of this video, and please use that. So the first thing that we need to do with anything is install packages. I already have the packages installed on my laptop, so I don't actually have to execute this code, but I will. So again, from the previous video, make sure you do Control Enter. So highlight the section of code and push Control Enter to actually execute that. So you'll see when I push Control Enter that this little red box shows up in the corner and then it starts downloading and installing packages. This will override the packages that I already have installed. So install.packages installs the packages that we need. In this demo, we're using MagRidder and dplyr, and we're going to use the checkpoint package just to guarantee reproducibility. Built this demo on the 29th of the third month in 2016. I'm not very good with dates, so whatever that is, use checkpoint on that date so that we guarantee reproducibility. So once we have the packages installed, each one of these library functions brings in a reference to that particular library. It's basically, here's all the functions that are available to you. Very similar to bringing in libraries or references in any other language. So we'll go ahead and highlight those lines of code, enter, bring in those. You may or may not see something that says, warning, this was built under R version 3.2.4 or whatever. They're just warnings. You can practically ignore them. If it doesn't work in your environment, then maybe you need to go take a look at it. But typically, it's just a warning. Don't worry so much about that. And then we're going to execute checkpoint. Go back to an earlier episode, the introduction to Microsoft R Open, to understand more deeply what it does. Basically, it's guaranteeing reproducibility of this demo as of that date. So the first demo that I have prepared for you is demonstrating the forward pipe operator and how this works. We're going to use this pipe operator very extensively because it really cleans up all of our manipulation tasks exponentially. It's absolutely incredible. So for this demo, we're taking a very simple function. I've created this function called mult, M-U-L-T, and basically it just takes in two numbers, multiplies them together, and gives that back as output. So line 17, we'll go ahead and execute that. That stores the function into memory. And to do a demo, let's do 2 times 6 times 5 times 10. So by using the multiplier function. The traditional way we would do this is by creating a series of nested statements. So we would have mult 6 by 2, which is inside of mult 5 by that, which is inside of mult 10 by that. So that's the traditional way of doing it. If we execute this line of code, we will see that the result of this is 600. Now, the issue is that this is really ugly. Even in a simple example, it's very nasty syntax. It's hard to read. If you need to modify something, it gets into this whole parentheses nonsense, and it's just absolutely chaotic. The way to that the pipe operator helps fix this is it takes whatever's on the left side and puts that as the first parameter into whatever is on the right-hand side. So in this case, we've got function which takes in x and y, mult. We're going to take 2, and we're going to put that on the left-hand side of mult. So basically, this is equivalent to doing mult 2 comma 6. So then we do take the output of 2 and mult 6, and then pass that into the input of mult 5. And then we take the output of that and pipe that into mult again with an additional parameter of 10. So if we execute all of this code, we get the same exact result. So what we're seeing here is that line 20 is the equivalent to 23 through 26. The primary difference is that you see the order of operations very clearly, and the syntax is nice and clean, and it's easy to understand, and you know what's happening first. And if you ever have to modify something, oh, I had a bug, I was supposed to make this mult negative 6, but if I mult negative 6, I need to make sure that I mult by negative 1 again, mult negative 1. You know, something along these lines, it really, really cleans up the syntax and allows you to modify in the appropriate place much easier. So for our next demo, we're going to actually read some data in. So you'll see here we have this read.csv function. This comes out of the box with R. We're not using anything special. You'll notice that this string here, C colon backslash backslash data backslash backslash Miami311.csv. This is the name I gave the CSV file, and this is also where I stored it. You need to replace this string with the location of your file. Notice that I have backslash backslash. The backslash character in R, as well as many other programming languages, is an escape character. That means that if you simply do C:\data\Miami, it's actually going to resolve into this. And that is not the location of my file by any means. So you need to add the additional backslashes to escape the escape character. Otherwise, it thinks \D is a special character, \M is a special character. It's not. We're specifying a file path using typical backslashes. So what we do is we highlight and execute this code. What this is going to do is it's going to bring in the 311 data as a data frame and store that into the variable 311. So like I said, 770 something thousand observations in this particular data set. So it's going to take a while. And there we go. Now we have the data loaded. We'll see this over on the right hand side where we see M311. We can expand this and see the various variables as well as what they were brought in as. So that's good. The next thing we want to do is just take a general look at it in the output window. So if we type M311 and execute this line of code, it's going to go through and attempt to print all 775,000 observations to the output window. So again, this is an operation that takes a little while. And there you have it. What we'll see is that this particular data is extremely poorly formatted. It's really hard to read and understand any of this in any sort of way. So dplyr comes with this tbl_df. It's a table data frame. All this really does is overwrite some of the output functions and allows you to present the data in a much cleaner fashion. So if we execute this particular line of code and re-output the 311 data, what you'll notice is that we get the data in an output that is much easier to look at. It gives us just a subset of the variables to look at, and then it tells us which variables are not shown. Now, if we need to take a closer look at this, because we want to see everything, there's this glimpse operator, or glimpse function, and that is going to output all of the variables as well as the data that's associated with those. That will be more similar to the old way of looking at it. Now, we also are interested in taking a look at the summary in data manipulation. One of the first things you want to do is take a look at your data set. So 311 has this case owner. A way that you can find some of the labels or variables that you have is by typing labels M311, and that will give you all of the labels that are associated. So what are the columns? What are the feature names? So we have this case owner. We can take a look at the summary of case owner, and we'll see that we have a variety of things in here, and they're very poorly named. So we're going to get into one of the first objectives in data manipulation is nice, clean, pretty names. It's very difficult to work with data that has poor names. There are data sets out there where 1, 2, 3, 4 actually means northeast, southwest. That's terrible. Nobody understands what in the world that's on about. So we're going to create this lookup table and use this syntax. Can be totally honest here. I'm not exactly sure how or why this works. This is something that I found, and I have been memorizing this syntax, and this is just the syntax that I use. And I get over it and I look it up from here on out for renaming. So works great for renaming. In fact, you can use it to do the exact inverse of what you just did. So basically, it's a translation table back and forth between clean names and dirty names. So what we'll see here is that we want to create this lookup table, and it's going to be a vector, and it's going to contain the bad name on the left equals the new clean name on the right. In this particular instance, if we take a closer look at this, we'll see that there are things like traffic engineering a couple of times on the right. It's because traffic engineering, highway engineering, and traffic signals are all actually just traffic engineering. So we're going to kind of mash those into one. Road and bridges may or may not be within traffic engineering, so that's being put in its own. Then other things like, I don't really want to have to type public_works_mosquito control. It's just mosquito control. There's only one mosquito control. So we're going to rename the factors here to make a little bit more sense and be a little bit cleaner. And when we display that in our output, it makes a little bit more sense for whoever we're delivering these insights for. So the first thing we do is grab lines 45 through 57 and execute that. That creates our table. And this is the final piece of the syntax. It's to take the table and pass it the vector of all instances of case owner. So what it's going to do is grab all matches for the bad name and replace that with the good name. And we're going to store that back into case owner. Now notice we use the pipe operator and pass it to factor. What this is doing is we're going to reestablish this as a factor or categorical type. It's not going to be a character, and since we've removed some features out of this or some types of observations or categories, we want to make sure that that's reflected in the resulting piece of data. Ergo, we pass it to factor. So one thing to kind of be aware of is that this is exactly the same. This syntax here is exactly the same as if we did this. Now we use the pipe operator because this syntax here is atrocious. So we'll go ahead and undo that and use the syntax that we want. So let's go ahead and highlight that, execute it, and come back out. So now what we see when we do summary of case owner is that we have an output of all the nice clean names for that particular factor as far as number of observations for each one. So here we can see that we have 131,000 service calls just to animal services. And we can see that everything for traffic engineering has been merged into a single one. We've got 26,465 calls. If we go look at the various traffic engineering calls previously, we've got 6,440, and then if we go take a look at highway engineering, there's 85, signals is 9,000. So we've taken all that and merged it into one category that can all be looked at as a single group. So that's really useful. So part two of renaming, we've renamed things that are observations within a feature. Now it might be useful to rename entire features themselves. So if we take a look at labels in 3.1.1 again, we'll see that those labels are still pretty ugly. We have things like neighborhood dot 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 district dot 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 ward dot 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 etc. I can't imagine handing a report that has a label like that over to an executive. I would look like a total fool. So it helps to just rename these things into what they actually are supposed to be up front. So we're going to go ahead and rename ticket.created.date.time into created date. And we're going to do last updated date and closed date and address and district and zip and state instead of all the ridiculous names that existed before, because they didn't make a lick of sense. Also, it's going to give us the added benefit of being able to reference these features by the new names that we have given it and give us less complex typing and commands and further clean up our syntax. Data manipulation is hard enough without having terrible names. So basically, the dplyr package has this wonderful rename function. So the rename function takes in, first parameter is the data set, second parameter is the name equals the old name. So what we're doing is we're using the pipe operator. Remember, the pipe operator takes whatever is on the left and pipes it to the first parameter into the function and then applies parameters after that. So this can be thought of just like we did with the mult function. Now imagine if we did this in the traditional syntax. We would be doing like rename with like all these commas like this, and it would just be a load of nonsense, and I can't write code like that. So this is why we have the pipe operator. So it really cleans things up. The first thing we're going to do is take M311, and we're going to take that whole data set and we're just going to simply rename the created date. And then we're going to take the result of that, which has the already renamed created date, and rename last updated date. We're going to take the result of that, and then we're going to rename closed date, take the result of that, rename address, and you get the idea. We go through each one of these steps. So we'll go ahead and execute this section of code, and it all gets reassigned to M311. Now, if we take a look at labels M311 again, you'll see that we have the really nice naming that we had before. Not only that, we can do things like summary M311 $district. And now we can see the districts. Instead of having to type the neighborhood .district.ward.etc garbage that used to be there. So at this point, we have ourselves a really nice, clean-looking data set. We've cleaned up some of the observations that had poor names, as well as column names or features that had poor names, and now we're ready to actually do something more meaningful. One of the last things to take note of is sometimes you have a data set that is very large and you have a computer that rather sucks and just doesn't have enough computational power to deal with all the data that you have. So there's some sampling that you can do. This is just grabbing 10% of the data or 1,000 observations. It's completely random as far as how it picks those things. So we take the data set, we pipe it in to sample underscore fraction, executes that, and we'll see over on the right hand side, we'll see that over on the right hand side, this M311 fraction has 10% of the data that was initially there. And then if we do M311 by an actual number, we'll see that we have 1,000 observations. So this is a really good way to work out some of your manipulations on a smaller data set so that your computations take only a few seconds instead of, like, you know, 5 minutes or whatever. Because if you had to sit there and do this over the course of 5 minutes just for experimenting, it would drive me bonkers. Not very useful to do it that way. So what I usually like to do is grab a sample and then do manipulations on the sample. Then we'll go back and do it across the entire data set and work out any kinks on the big data set. Whew. Okay, so we'll take a breather for a second. All right, feature manipulation. There are two different verbs that modify features. Now, the word features can be interchangeable with columns. So in a data frame, you basically have columns which go across the top. I've got a column of case owner, then I have a column of dates, and then I have a column of GPS coordinates. Those are your features and or columns. Depends on who you're talking to. They'll use columns or features as the name. So in feature manipulation, this is modifying the actual features themselves. And the two verbs that we have are select and mutate. And those two verbs either add or subtract features. So the select verb actually reduces the number of features that you have available, while the mutate verb actually adds those in. So let's take a closer look at this. So if we want to select just the case owner and the created date, we'll take the M311 data, we'll use the forward pipe operator, and pass it to select. Select takes a data frame, comma, all the other stuff you want to select. So if we do this and execute lines 82 and 83, we'll see that we have a new data frame that results with just case owner and created date. So we have effectively removed all other features from that particular data set. Now if we want to exclude a single column, this is really important. You just add the minus sign in front of the name. So very similar syntax as we saw before. Take M311 and we execute this, and you'll see the output that we have here has every single feature that we had before, just minus the close date. And then you have a variety of helper verbs. The helper verbs that you have available are starts with, ends with, contains, and matches. Now, I'm just going to demo the contains. The rest of them are pretty much the same. So M311 select contains issue, comma, case owner. What this is going to do is return us a data frame in which any of the features contains the word issue as it exists spelled here, which is case sensitive. And then we're going to return the case owner. So I want you to notice in our initial data frame, we've got issue type and issue description, and then case owner. So if we go ahead and execute this, we're going to get it back in that order. So we're going to get issue type, issue description, case owner. Very important in ordering. So when you try and merge two data frames together, say you do some sort of calculated data frame of some really great values, and then you need to add in raw values underneath that data frame, your features need to line up exactly. So understanding how to select and how that adds into the ordering of your data frame is extremely important. And this distinct function is kind of interesting. What it's going to do is take that same exact data frame and return only instances where you have unique entries. So here we have issue type, description, and case owner. We want to see how many there are. I want you to take notice that there are 774,000 of these when you have the entire data set. When we take a distinct across just those three columns, there are 217 completely unique instances of issue type, description, and case owner. So as far as number of combinations in this data set for those three combined, 217. So that's pretty cool. So that's select, just showed off removing features out of our data set and then selecting the distinct combinations of those. Now let's do mutate, which is going to add a brand new feature. These are going to be calculated. So what we'll do is take the M311, pass it into mutate, and I made up a calculation that I thought would be interesting. I thought it would be really neat to see, okay, you had a goal to resolve a ticket in this number of days. Let's subtract how many days it actually took you and divide that by the number of days that you set as your goal. Kind of like a percentage look at you know, how you're actually attaining your targets. So what we'll do is execute this and store the result into X. Now what you'll notice is that X now has this goal KPI. Over on the right, we'll see goal was sourced from M311, which had 22 variables. It now has 23, which is goal KPI. Inside of here, you'll see that we said goal KPI equals blah, blah, blah. So goal KPI is the name of the new feature that we're creating, and equals blah, 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 which is goal days minus actual completed days divided by goal days, is the calculation that creates the observation for each observation in that data frame. So each row gets a new feature and an observation for each one of those. So if we execute this summary, take a look just to see what the actual values are. Surprise, surprise, we have negative infinity as the minimum, we have a mean of negative infinity, maximum of 1594. There's something really weird going on here. You'll notice that we have a divide by goal.days. Somebody has zero as their goal for resolving ticket issues. So that's a little bit interesting. So that's something that we can actually dive into and use some of this data manipulation to derive insights. Who's doing it? Why are they doing it? And what can we find out about it? Observation manipulation. We just did feature manipulation, which is our columns. We're going to modify how many variables that we have in a data set. Now we have observation manipulation, which is the individual rows across all features. So this is going to be adding rows, removing rows, and changing rows entirely. So we kind of saw that there was this section there where there was people who have a zero for the goal days. So the first thing I want to do before we start off with observation manipulation is to create a data set which contains just instances where the goal days is less than or equal to zero. So we'll start by creating goals, which is going to be case owner, issue type, goal days, completed days, and ticket status. We don't need all the data, we just need that subset. And then we're going to use this filter. So filter is one of the first verbs that we can use. This basically, you give it true or false for the same size that your data set is, and it will give you back a subset of that data which meets those criteria. So in this instance, goal days is less than or equal to zero. So it's going to go into that observation, find the goal days feature, find the number, compare that to zero. If it's less than or equal to zero, we keep it. If not, toss it out. So this would generate a true when goal days is less than or equal to zero. So let's go ahead and execute that piece of code. So that's interesting. We've now got zero goal days. Let's take a look at the number of rows. We've got 4,448 observations in which the goals are zero. If we take a look at the status, we have 4,393 of those are closed, 47 are duplicates, and a couple of other things that aren't there anymore. What's really important is that you can see pending, transf, unprec, whatever. Those have zero observations and therefore have no place in our data set anymore. So one way to kind of clean this up a little bit, back to data cleaning, is to execute this factor again. So factor is a function, and in fact we can write this more functionally by replacing that and doing the pipe operator. So what we're going to do is pass this into the function factor. What factor does is it finds all the different labels there are and creates some metadata around that to say this is a categorical data type. These are the categories that are possible. Nothing else exists. So right now we have pending and transf as well as open. Once we pass this into factor, pending and transf are no longer going to exist, and we're only going to have closed, dupe, locked, and open. So let's do this for both of these data sets, because remember, we reduced from 775,000 observations down to 4,000. So we're going to have lost a sheer number of categories just by what was there. So what's interesting is that we can now see which issues had 0 days. So if we do summary zero goal issue type, we can see that as far as issues out there, there's animal services dog tag, ASD spay-a-thon, mosquito control. These are the only issues since the year 2013 in which a department has said our goal for resolving these things is today. As soon as that call comes in, we need to resolve it. So that's pretty cool. Now, what I thought would be more interesting is to see who's not doing so good at meeting their goals. Okay, your goal is to do it in one day. You know, I usually call in and it's like, oh, they didn't resolve my ticket for 500 days. So I wanted to see like, okay, how many are actually doing this? So there's this arrange verb that we can use, which is also an observation manipulation. What this does is it rearranges the observations by a specific order. In this case, we want to arrange by the actual days that it took to complete in descending order. Now, we'll go ahead and execute this whole block here. And what we'll see is that we got 291, 263, and 259. So waste management and traffic engineering are our number three, our top three who did the worst. They had a goal of 0 days, and one of these bloody tickets took 291 days to finally close. Then traffic engineering was a traffic signal completely out. It took 263 days to resolve this particular traffic signal being out. That's ridiculous. That's two-thirds of a year. Anyways, back to data manipulation. One of the things that I wanted to point out is that here we did descending order. It assumes ascending order unless told otherwise. So if we actually do this without descending, we'll see the actual completed days goes from zero on up. Looks like most tickets are resolved on time. It's just these kind of select few which have major issues. Now, the last one that fits into observation manipulation is summaries. So summaries kind of fit into observation manipulation, but it also fits into feature manipulation. The reason that summarize fits into both of those worlds is it takes the entirety of your data frame and boils that down into a one-line summary of what it's about. So very much about calculating averages and standard standard deviations and things like that. So to kind of do something that's kind of interesting with just flat data sets like this, we're going to take zero goal, we're going to use our pipe operator, and we're going to pass it into summarize. Now here, very much like the mutate, you'll notice that the syntax here is very, very similar to mutate. We're going to calculate the mean, the standard deviation, the median, the total number of observations, and how many NAs were in actual completed. So there are some NAs out there, and we want to see who's not entering data. So, I mean, it's bad enough to have 263 days to resolve a ticket, but then if you're just not entering data at all, who knows how long it took, right? So you could have taken 360 days or you could have taken two. So that's not very good either. That might mean that the ticket was dropped completely and unresolved. So what we'll do is we'll take the mean. Now, R has a lot of wonderful built-in functions. Mean is one of them. And we're going to calculate the mean off of the actual completed days. Now you'll notice there's this comma, na.rm equals true. This is super, super important. In data sets, you're gonna have holes all over the place where people forgot to enter data or something happened. And what this na.rm equals true does is that it says, if there's an NA, remove it. So we're setting this particular property to true. So it's going to calculate the mean, and if it encounters an observation that is null, what it's going to do is say, yeah, forget about it. I'll worry about that one later. Let's just grab the next one and keep running with calculating stuff. So much, much better, because what happens, especially when you're doing averages, is if it encounters an NA, it blows up the entire calculation. How do you calculate something without having an NA? So you can go back and clean that up if you like. So if we go ahead and do this, execute this whole thing, we go from having 4,400 something observations, 4,448 observations of five variables, down to having one observation of one, two, three, four, five variables. So we can see that the mean resolution time is 0.8 days. It's not bad. We have a pretty high standard deviation. That means that on average, it's plus or minus 9 days to resolve an issue. So that's not necessarily very good. But the median is zero, and there's 4,448 observations, and there are 42 entries in which somebody forgot to enter information about how long it actually took to resolve a ticket. Group manipulation. Group manipulation is by far the most interesting. Group manipulation works with all of the other verbs as well, and that's what makes it interesting. Just grouping by itself is uninteresting. Great, you get a bunch of groups, who cares? But being able to do summaries per group and filter per group suddenly puts a lot of power into your hands. And we can just go ahead and start jumping in, but before we do, I want to kind of explain what this looks like. So we start with a single data frame, right? It's just one big flat file. Now when we group, say by case owner, let's assume that there's only three case owners. Instead of having one big data frame, you can mentally think about it as having three data frames, in which the first data frame is case owner one, and the second data frame is case owner two, and the third data frame is case owner three. And the only data that exists in each one of those data frames pertains only to those particular case owners. So the number of observations that you have in each one of those data frames is going to be different, but the features inside of each one of those is going to be the same. And now you can do manipulations and summaries on each one of these data frames as a whole. So let's take a look at just kind of how this works. What you'll notice, we'll start with just creating a group. So we're going to assign X to a group. We're going to group by the case owner. And let's take a look at the class of X. The class of X is group data frame, table data frame, table, and data.frame. So the first three, table, DF, table, and data frame, Those are normal, those are common, that's what we had before. But it's this grouped DF. This grouped DF is interesting because it adds in this little attribute here, vars. It's a list of one case owner. Now if we grouped by case owner, comma, district, I gotta learn how to spell, district, let's do issue type. So if we execute this, you'll see that we have a second one. We have case owner and then issue type. So you can do nested data frames, or nested grouping rather. And this allows you to create rollups that are specific to each level. So I can now create a summary of issue types per case owner. And if I wanted to do another one like actual completed days. So, okay, what if we did actual completed days, then issue type, so forth and so on. So think about how you nest these groups and what kinds of insights you want to attempt to derive from each one of those. So let's go ahead and keep this back to case owner. Whoop. All right, it looks just like a data frame as well. So if we just take a look at X, you'll notice from like a visual perspective in the console output, it looks exactly like a data frame, but it behaves completely differently. So let's do something a little bit interesting. Let's see for each case owner. So we're going to take 0 goal days. We're going to group by case owner. Let's count how many observations there are for each case owner. Then see how many what the average completed days are for each case owner, what the maximum number of completed days were, as well as the minimum. So this is pretty interesting. Just by doing this, we can see how each department stacks up against every other department as far as how well they perform resolving tickets in which they promise to complete those tickets in 0 days. So here we can see that we have traffic engineering has the worst with an average completion of 1.4. Now, let's actually do something a little bit more interesting and use that arrange verb that I talked about. So if we arrange, let's arrange by the average.comp days. So we added this new average comp days in ascending order. So animal services, by far the best performing by orders of magnitude. I mean, it's literally 10% the time of waste management and just even significantly less in traffic engineering. I'm not very good at math. I just have to kind of type it into the console and see what 0.07 divided by 1.4 is. But what's interesting here is that we can also see the number of observations. So, you know, it's kind of unfair to compare waste management to traffic engineering because traffic engineering literally serviced 4 times as many calls as waste management. That's not really a fair comparison. So, of course, it took twice the time. I serviced 4 times as many calls as you, but it took twice the time. That actually makes me look twice as good as you because I serviced 4 times as many in only twice the time. It should take 4 times as much. If you had to do that, it would have taken you 4 times as long, ergo I'm better than you. So not really a fair comparison, but you can start kind of recreating these numbers to do things like that if you wanted to. But what's interesting here is that animal services is basically 1700, so about 400 less than traffic engineering, but their average completed days is significantly less. So now we can start asking questions about why. Is it because what traffic engineering had to resolve was much harder? Or is it that traffic engineering is understaffed? Maybe animal services has a better processing pipeline than traffic engineering. So doing these grouped operations where you can stack things side by side and compare them is just incredibly powerful. So throughout the rest of this, I'm going to pose a series of questions using what we've just covered and learned. And the goal is for you to accomplish these. I will post the question, and then I'm going to pause for about 15 seconds, and then I'm going to show and explain the answer. So exercise one. This is a challenge. Please try to accomplish this without looking ahead at the answer. But if you can't figure it out, it's totally fair. You probably just saw this for the first time. So what I want you to do is, for each year, what are the top three issues and the average resolution time? So let's think about that. So for 2013, was it the number of waste basket calls? Was it the number of dead animal calls? Okay, we know that for each year, an issue. Now I also want to know what the average resolution time was for each one of those issues. So there's a couple of hints here. These are things that I didn't necessarily cover, but by posing questions, you can always encounter new challenges, and it gives you the opportunity to expand your knowledge a little bit. The first thing is lubridate. Lubridate lubricates your date. So dates are inherently a little bit difficult to work with. And this particular package provides a series of functions that makes it easier to deal with. So let's go ahead and execute these. So make sure you install the package, then bring in the reference. So if we take a summary, so anyways, we've got 729, 2013 times AM, PM, so forth and so on. So we've got this year thing here. We got to extract the year, and this might not even be stored as a date. If we take a look at class of M311 $ created date, we're going to see that it's actually a factor. So that means it's treating each one of these basically as a string type and a factor. There are a finite number of them, but it's not really a factor, it's a date. So we want a factor date. So let's go ahead and take a look at this. So when you bring the lubridate package in, the first thing we're going to need to do is do asDate. asDate is totally within the realm of standard R. You don't need lubridate for this. So if we kind of create this date2 thing, I'm using the sample so it goes a little faster. You should try and use the bigger version. We'll see that we actually have dates, but you'll notice that we've removed the time from it. The time may or may not necessarily be important. There's so many observations that I'm just boiling it down into days. But what lubridate does help with is this year thing. So year function is something that comes with lubridate, and it allows us to just extract the year. So if we go ahead and execute this line of code, we'll see that we get every single year out of this. So very, very helpful. And then lastly, there is top in and arrange. So top in is something that I want to show, because what it does is it's going to select the top from a particular category. So if we execute this M311 and select just those things, the actual completed days, we'll see a variety of items here. Now if we do an arrange by, arrange descending actual completed days, we'll see that we get the one with the most completed days is this garbage complaint. Okay, but we want to just have three of them. We've returned back all of the rows. So if we go ahead and select this, we're going to get back our top three, but not necessarily in order. So then we need to arrange to get back the top three in order. So again, the challenge here is for each year. So extract the year, probably need to group it by year. What were the top three issues? And what was the average resolution time? You have about 15 seconds before I show the answer. Okay, the answer. Let's go ahead and take a look at this. Let's just start by executing everything so we can see what the end result is. So what we get back is 9 different things. And it's arranged by the number of observations for each grouping. So the first one is year. So we're going to arrange by descending observations. So in 2013, the issue type that had the most requests was bulky trash, followed by green waste, followed by a stray dog. Then in 2014, it was bulky waste, bulky trash, green waste, and recycling. Then bulky trash, green waste, and recycling. lots of trash, except for 2013, in which we had a huge number of stray dogs at large. What's interesting is when you find kind of weird things like this, is that if you go look it up on the internet and search, typically you can find interesting articles. If you type in stray dogs, Miami, 2013, you might want to try and boil this down to by month, and maybe you can type a month in or a date and see if there was a particular day in which there was an absurd number of these. So let's take a look more specifically at how we got to this answer. So we take the 311 calls, we're going to mutate and add a year to it. So remember, we're going to extract the year. So we're going to take the created date as a date, and we're going to take that format that I showed in the hint section, and we're going to pass this into the year function. So that's going to give us every year of every observation. So now, if we execute this, we simply have a data set that also has the year variable in it. Then we want to group by year and then issue type. Remember I talked about the double layer grouping, and we can do tiered summaries? That's exactly what we're going to do. So once we execute this, we're going to have a series of data frames, year and issue type. Theoretical, you think of it like multiple data frames. And then we're going to summarize at the issue type level the number of observations for each one of those issues, and then we're going to calculate the average resolution time. Remember to remove all NAs. So at this point, we have all the number of observations and the average resolution time for every single issue type in every single year. So that's useful. But then we want the top three by sheer count. So what are the number of observations? We want to take the top three by observation, and then we want to arrange it. And that's the answer. So part two. This question is, what are the top three methods we will receive GPS information for? So if you take a look at the data, you'll see that there is GPS information in longitude and latitude in here. So there's a method as far as method received. Was it a phone? Was it a ticket? How did this come into our call center? And what I want you to do is to figure out which top three methods of receiving a ticket are going to give us GPS coordinates. So, the answer. Let's go ahead and execute it, just like we did earlier. So the number one way that we're going to get GPS coordinates is by phone. Then it's whatever this X interface is, and then whatever this buck slip is. And also we have this number of GPS observations. These are the number of observations in the data set in which we receive GPS coordinates for those items. So by phone, 579,612. That's awfully high for a phone. That might be something worth looking into. Go look up ethics on data science. These are just numbers. So the answer, how did we get it? We're going to take the M311, then we're going to group by the method that we received, and then we're going to create a summary of these GPS observations. And I want you to pay really close attention to this. Sum is a function that comes with R, and it just adds, you know, 2 plus 4 plus 5 plus whatever across the entire data frame. But what's interesting is that it's adding logical values. Well, that's kind of weird, isn't it? Well, basically, it's counting the number of trues. True resolves to a 1, and false resolves to a 0. Ergo, we can use those conversions as a sum to count the number of observations of true, and or take the inverse of that compared to the entire observations and get the number of falses. So what we want to do is use this isNA. So this says, is the latitude null? And then this one says, is the longitude null? So this will give us back true or false, and this will give us back true or false, and then it's also wrapped inside of another parenthesis with an and. And that says, typical logical operator, true and true is true, true and false is false, false and false is false. So this is going to give us back, inside of sum, the entirety is going to be a true or a false, and we're going to sum all of that across the data frame. And that's the number of GPS observations. Kind of a neat trick. After that, we wanted the top three, so we'll take top n, three of GPS observations, and arrange in descending order. And lastly, we have question number three. This one's a little bit tricky to understand, so I'm going to do my best to pose the question well. Which districts service the most requests for each department, and what are the top three issues? So basically, what we're saying is that for animal services, which district services animal services the most, and what are the top three issues that you're servicing? So then we want to do maybe the waste department. Is it District 7 that services the most waste department calls, or is it District 5? Now, if it's District 2, what are the top three issues that District 2 is having for the waste department that they have to resolve? What's interesting about this is that typically the way that the budgets are laid out is that the county gets a budget and allocates that budget to districts. Well, this gives us an interesting way to look at the actual usage of services per district, and maybe we can compare this to the tax base for that district and see if they're actually paying their fair share for the number of services that they use. Kind of an interesting question that you can answer using this. So that's the question. And again, I'm going to give you a few seconds before I move on to the answer. Okay, the answer for part three. Let's go ahead and execute this. This gives us a large piece of information. You can save it to a CSV. We're going to use this glimpse thing. And what we get here is for animal services, we've got District 9, 8, and 2. For District 9, the top ones are stray dog at large, animal dead or missing, and dead animal pickup. Wow, so that's probably a lot of dead dogs. You've got number one issue is stray dogs, followed by dead or missing animal reports, followed by we found a dead animal and we went and picked it up. One can draw one's own conclusions about that. If we want, we can store this to a variable, say x, and we can take a closer look at each of the observations. So if we want to do x of 2, for example, animal services, district 8, animal dead or missing, stray dog at dead animal pickup. What about like 6? We've got for construction, district 9, illegal dumping, and then NA. It only had illegal dumping in District 9. The number one issue in District 9 is illegal dumping. There were no other big issues as far as construction was concerned. So, okay, that's the answer. Let's go ahead and dive into how we achieved the answer to that question. We take the 311 data, we pipe that into group by. We're going to group by case owner because we want to know for each department, which is the case owner, which district is using those services. So we need to count issues for each district in each case. So case owner, then district, then issue type. Now, once we do this group by, we're basically at the issue type level. So when we summarize, we're summarizing and removing the issue type sets of data. So we're going to summarize by and count the number of observations. This basically, if we return this, is the number of observations for each issue in each district by case owner. So in this instance, we can see that District 0 for animal services, an animal bite to a person, has 27 instances in which an animal bit a person in District 0. And then we can see that there were 37 instances of animal cruelty investigations. Okay, that's good. Now we need to arrange in descending order because we want to know the top ones. So if we go ahead and grab this data and arrange in descending order, we'll see that District 0 for Animal Service, the number one issue is a stray dog at large with 132 counts, with 59 counts of dead animals or missing animal reports, and an ASU police assist. Now, the next one is a little bit tricky. One of the fine details of Summarize is that each one of the new features that we add into Summarize has to resolve into a single value because it's being put into a data frame. Now, if it was a list, you can go hunky-dory with list. You do whatever the heck you want with those things. But a data frame requires you to have a specific single value in each cell. And that can be a little bit of a problem if you want the top three issues. So what we're going to do is start with a simple case of total observations is simply the sum of the total observations for each issue. So for each issue, we counted the total number of observations. We're basically adding all those up, and that's the total number of observations. Now the top issues, what we're doing is we already arranged the issue type in descending order. We're taking number 1, 2, and 3 off of each of those vectors and tossing it to string, which is going to give us back a comma-separated list. So if we go ahead and execute this, and we have to glimpse it. We'll see that we get back a comma separated list, stray dog at large, animal dead or missing, and an ASU police assist. That's exactly what we're looking for. So now that we have that, we want the top three for total number of observations for each case owner. So right now we're seeing primarily District 0. District 0 may not necessarily be the number one case owner. So when we take the top three for each one, so we'll see District 2, 8, and 9. With number 2, with looks like District 9 being the top one. We haven't arranged in descending order yet. So now that lastly, we arrange by descending order the total observations, and that's going to give us descending order for each case owner. So now we have Animal Services, District 9, 8, and 2. So District 9 had the most usage of Animal Services, not by too many more than 8 and 2. Then Construction was District 2. And then Information Outreach, District 8. So that concludes data manipulation with R. And episode 5, I hope you found this useful. Next one, we're going to be doing beautiful visualizations in R using this exact same data set. So if you plan on going to the next video, I highly suggest becoming more familiar with the data manipulation tasks. Thank you, and have a good one.